Only smart people get up early enough to listen to the Francine Marie Show. So thanks for listening, smarty pants.
Oi, Billy! Oscar! Dave! Get up! Francine Marie Show's on!
Good morning. Thanks for joining us. Mecklenburg County, I tell you what, it's endless, the services that are provided for us. We have some new best friends this morning. We have Dr. Steven Strzelecki. He is our lead clinical psychologist, Forensic Evaluations Unit with Mecklenburg County Criminal Justice Services. Good morning.
Good morning, Francine.
Also, we have the amazing Melissa Ziss. She is our jail liaison, a forensic evaluation unit as well, for Mecklenburg County Criminal Justice Services.
Good morning.
Good morning. And we have the amazing Marcus Boyd, our court liaison for Forensic Evaluations Unit for Mecklenburg County Criminal Justice Services. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, I'm glad everybody could come to talk about what they do, because would you imagine if you're not in the court system, people don't even know this exists.
Exactly.
So today we're talking about the HOP program. HOP is a collaborative effort between the city of Charlotte-Mecklenburg and the local nonprofits to decrease crime, justice, recidivism, and homelessness. It all kind of ties together, doesn't it?
Yes, definitely. It's usually the nonprofits who work with the homeless or street outreach. Different agencies, it's not just urban ministries. They're a large portion of that, and the shelter staff. But there's also the PATH program, which is usually it's through supportive housing, and they kind of link people with severe and persistent mental illness to services. So there are other kinds of people involved, the hospitals, Atrium, hopefully Novant soon will be involved in just helping us with people who are homeless and frequenting the ERs and the jails and, you know,
it's almost
cycling.
A cycle, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So being the jail liaison, what is a day like for you?
No 2 days are ever the same.
And we already confirmed nobody ever sits at their desk for longer than 2 hours.
No. There are days when I'm lucky if I'm ever in the office. A lot of times I'll be in and out of the office to get resources or get the keys for our van to transport somebody. Or we might be with someone getting a food referral because they're not connected to services yet, but they have a place to stay. So they need food, clothing, things like that. We're kind of a... One of the roles I have is kind of that transition from people get out of jail to when they can get involved with the services that they need. And it all just depends on who's most vulnerable and what availability I have. And Marcus and I work together as a team in a lot of ways because we kind of plug the holes and the gaps.
Right. But at least you see them.
Yes. Yes. We do. We see them. It's just a lot of them.
Yeah. Right. And can we plug all the holes?
We fill a gap within the behavioral health system that is really the county's responsibility because we are the last service provider for citizens in our community. And so a lot of our individuals have serious persistent mental illness. They're homeless or at risk of homelessness. There's a lack of funding or services to meet their needs. And so you find them, they may be homeless. They get arrested for what might be more poverty-related crimes, and they cycle in and out of the jail. Oftentimes they might go to the ER for medical reasons or if they're hungry. And so we really are trying to find those vulnerable individuals, whether they're in the community or in jail, and then try to link them with the services and the resources they need in order to allow them to live as independently as possible in the community and safely and meet their needs.
Poverty related.
Well, a lot of our folks might get arrested for trespassing, maybe a misdemeanor larceny, and really they're looking for food or to feed themselves or even really small things they could sell to make some money to meet their needs because they have the lack of income, housing, medical services, and they're really trying to get by on whatever they can.
Many people don't really realize that some of these individuals not only have like schizophrenia, which is a severe and persistent mental illness, or a traumatic brain injury. In addition to having a mental illness, they sometimes have an intellectual or developmental disability. So they may be reading at like a kindergarten level, if they can read at all. And when they go into the criminal justice system, which has been the trend in our country for the last at least 10 years or more, their benefits will become suspended because you can't be paid by Social Security and be provided for by the jail because it's another government agency. You know, if you're in jail, they'll suspend them. If you're in custody longer than a year, and you have Social Security income, the SSI portion, you have to reapply, which means you have to start all over to reapply. You don't just go down and show them that you're out of jail with paperwork from the jail, which is what you would do if it's less than a year. If they have disability where they worked for a long period of time, like as a carpenter or something, and then became ill and disabled, that doesn't necessarily get turned off, you know, or terminated. They just have to let them know they're out of jail. So it's a lot of moving parts to it, but that's been the biggest and saddest thing for me, is that there are so many individuals who are homeless, schizophrenic. They ask for help, but they don't really know what to say because they also have an intellectual or developmental disability on top of it. Those are what I look for in particular in this population.
Would you consider them most vulnerable?
To me, they're the most vulnerable, the IDD, the okay. intellectual and developmentally disabled in general. But then when you add all of these other components and they don't have any family left or supports, occasionally I'll find some where both parents have been deceased. They're maybe in their 40s or 50s, no siblings, or they've burned all their bridges with the siblings, and they just have nobody to help them fill out the applications and go through all of that. And if you would just go down to Social Security, you have to have an ID. If you don't have a state ID, or you don't have any identification that's acceptable to them, like a passport or anything like that, they can't help you fill it out because you need to verify who you are. You can't get an ID unless you have a birth certificate or Social Security card. I mean, there's all these things that you need to have that homeless people don't usually have in right. their possessions.
Right. You would have the Social Security card at home in a safe place instead of with you, because we used to do that years ago, carry around with us.
And unfortunately, a great deal of the folks we work with receive their behavioral health services in jail, which is not uncommon these days. Our jails and prisons have become the largest provider of behavioral health services in the United States. And our population, being homeless or housing challenged, don't have the resources to receive services in the community. And oftentimes that may be the place, if they're at a place in their recovery to accept the services, sometimes they might need a higher level, like a psychiatric hospital, to really help them with their needs. There's a shortage of those beds in the state. And so it really is a vicious cycle for the individuals we work with. And again, we see a lot of those folks that are living on the streets or in the shelters uptown, which is part of this HOP program, is to try to reach out, address people who may have been in the criminal justice system to help them not return, but also to really identify folks who are at risk of becoming involved and prevent them from ever getting arrested and going through jail.
A lot of people call it a program, but to be honest, it's more of a meeting of individuals who are involved with this person, and we see it as a logistical meeting. So we don't sit there and talk about everything about these individuals. We're more interested in who's done the housing application? Have they been engaged or approached by other people other than Urban Ministries or me or Marcus? Because sometimes your person on Grey's Anatomy, they used to talk about, you know, that you would have a person. Sometimes that person that they click with is, it's like shoes, I guess. I always say that you have to have really good fitting shoes for it to work well. I tell the people who are resistant, you know, that maybe not me, I'll come back. I come back multiple times. And sometimes on the sixth or eighth try, they decide they want help. It's nothing personal. It's just either they're not ready to receive it or I'm not the person that. So in those meetings, we look at logistically, because people have to go through these processes to get housing, to get benefits, and you have to go through multiple steps. And sometimes each agency will take a piece to make it faster. So I might do the SOAR application, which is a fast-track disability application for homeless individuals, whereas someone from Urban Ministry might do the housing application, working on getting their ID and helping to get all of the seven pieces of things that are involved in the housing application. And then we might have another person doing food stamps and Medicaid applications. And, you know, and the police have been a huge help. CMPD, it kind of started with the bicycle police, the CMPD uptown. And myself, when I came into this from Area Mental Health in about 2014, we just started talking about these individuals who were cycling through. Some I had known for many, many years, and some I wasn't familiar with. But I kind of tasked the officers with getting to know these individuals and coming to me with information. So it's not just, okay, Melissa, here's this guy. We want to add him. Well, what do you know about him? Does he have benefits? Does he not have benefits? Is he from here? So that they kind of build rapport. Because every now and then, believe it or not, the person for that individual is an officer. And that's been kind of a neat thing as well.
Yeah, let me mention Francine. I've gone to some of the HOP meetings, and it really is impressive that these the police officers, that they'll reach in their pocket, pull out their little notepad, the old-fashioned notepad, and they will have detailed notes that they've met someone that might be new to the area, that you know they're familiar with individuals that frequent different parts of the uptown area. Someone's new, they're trying to get to know who they are, get to know their name, what their needs may be, and they really are just fantastic resources for information and really are agents of change. They are there to help these individuals. And so that's part of our collaboration. We don't want to arrest individuals for these poverty crimes. We really want to get them access to the services they need. And the officers have been just fantastic in that respect. They're boots on the ground for the CMPD in the uptown area.
It's called the HOP program that we're talking about this morning with our fabulous Dr. Stephen Strzelecki. He is our lead clinical psychologist, forensic evaluations unit. Also, we have Melissa Ziss. She is our jail liaison. You just heard her. And Marcus Boyd. He is our court liaison with our forensic evaluations unit. Good morning.
Good morning.
So you and Melissa work hand in hand, van in van, right, to get the job done.
Singular, just van.
Van. Y'all need another
van.
Share
one. We need another van.
We need another van.
It's
okay, got it. So what's your day like?
Similar to what Melissa's is, we work to identify clients or citizens who probably meet the criteria for the services we're trying to provide, which is linking them to services in the community and appropriate resources.
Appropriate resources. I guess you guys have the list, the laundry list?
Absolutely. And there's a list that we create of identified resources, but there are also some that emerge because Charlotte is a growing community. So new nonprofits, new service providers come online each and every day. So we make sure we have kind of a running list, at least in our head, that of the services we want to use and connections or connects to the appropriate services.
And if I'm not mistaken, you track 25 individuals at a time.
Essentially, yes, ma'am. Okay. It's give or take a few more.
Got it. Yeah, because mm-hmm. how can you say no to number 26?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. We provide services as needed, and we try to do as much good as we possibly can.
I'm trying to think, what is the worst time of the year to be homeless?
Yeah.
We had hot weather. I don't know what you mm-hmm. guys discovered out there mm-hmm. this summer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very hot, and we're starting to get very cold. So I don't know if there's a time that preferred time. There are more resources available during the winter months, though, because we do have our homeless shelters that expand capacity, and we do have our Room at the End program, the Urban Ministry Center, along with local churches, coordinates.
Okay, got it. Room at the End. Yeah.
Yes, ma'am.
So you have the list of the nonprofits.
We do. And so the great thing about this team with Marcus and Melissa is they work together, but they come from different places. And so Marcus' background is really a lot with the homeless programs or ministry and individuals with substance use issues. Melissa comes mm-hmm. right out of area mental health, working with seriously persistent mentally ill folks with intellectual and developmental disabilities. And so combining those two forces really covers all the bases in terms of the individuals that we see within the HOP program, but really across the criminal justice system, because we're trying to prevent people from ending up in jail. Unfortunately, sometimes you find them when they are in jail, and then we're trying to work to help them get out, but linked with the services. So having this team and working through the continuum of criminal justice intercept points, you know, we can really try to address the needs of the individuals whenever we locate them.
You know, Melissa had mentioned that show Grey's Anatomy. I can think of the show All My Children.
Mm-hmm. It really can be soap opera. And really, for some of our folks, the difficulties they experience, the various points of involvement with the justice system. And we talk about when someone goes into jail, it's one of the worst days of their lives. I have all the respect for our sheriff's office. They run a fantastic program with our detention centers. It's never a good place for someone to be in jail, but certainly not for someone with a serious mental illness. And so when someone's being arrested, they might be on the street, they're homeless, and then they have a mental illness and it's not being treated, and they end up in jail. That's just not a good fit for anyone. So our population are more at risk of having substance use issues, having behavior problems when they're incarcerated within the detention centers. They're less likely to be employed, more at risk for being victimized when they're in the community and even within the detention setting. There's really a lot of places where we can intervene and need to intervene to help these individuals.
And how can you tell, doctor, when someone has mental health issues?
Right. We're a team. And even within our group, we work with the sheriff's office and other agencies to help us with that.
So how can you tell?
We go based on symptoms, and those symptoms can be reported by a number of different parties that Dr. Strzelecki referred to. So we may get a report from someone who's had previous engagement with them as they came into the jail and say, hey, this person is, if you mark off a list of symptoms, this person exhibiting these signs, or we've had prior engagement with these person. This is behavior that we've witnessed. And we go in and do an initial screening. that gives us, we can identify probable behavioral health issue there. Then we start requesting records or having that conversation with the client. A lot of times it is readily identified, especially when it comes to mental health systems or substance use. Melissa spoke about intellectual and developmental disabilities. Sometimes we don't get that on the front end. There's not the insight there to acknowledge, hey, I have an intellectual developmental disability. But once we do our digging with requesting records, if they are agreeable to it, we can then readily identify that. Melissa is also really good at requesting prison records or school records, things of that nature that's going to give us further insight into their background.
Wow, you guys are busy. Just a little bit, right? Right? So you keep that cell phone close to you.
Yes.
It really is.
It was buzzing.
I look at it as we're trying to put together a puzzle, and figure out this individual, what their deficits are, what their needs are, and then what's available in the community, how we can match them up to meet their needs. Some of it's readily available. Sometimes we have to, again, request records that are archived and take a while. Because we're the forensic evaluations unit, we do psychological testing. So there may be times where we would do a psychological evaluation to help give us additional information about the person's functioning and their needs, whether it's for a diagnosis or to help them access the disability benefits they may qualify for. We really try to work on each case individually and find all the information that would put together the best picture of who this person is to help them on their journey of recovery to be able to live independently in the community.
It's all about the journey to recovery.
It certainly is.
You want people well.
We do. We want people to have a say in their lives, to have control over where they live, who their providers are, to give them that sense of independence. And it really starts with whenever we identify them, to start to put those pieces together to move them towards that place in their lives.
You've all heard we've got a housing issue in Charlotte, North Carolina, affordable housing issue. Did the homeless outreach prevention program start when we first heard those words, or has this HOP program been around for a minute?
First, say that, yes, we're very much aware of that, the housing issue in Charlotte, and our population is significantly vulnerable because of their lack of income. So it is difficult for working individuals to afford housing. And we know that a fair number, 25% or more of folks that are homeless, are employed. And so it's not a question of work. It is really affordable housing.
True. And I think with the HOP program that we put together, formally it started in May of 2017, where we were using the roll call room to actually project up because it was more familiar to the officers. But with respect to affordable housing, there are people who actually have vouchers that need to be housed and can't find the fair market rent anymore. There's very few landlords that have those units available. And that's what scares a lot of us, is that those type of units aren't available. And if they are, they're way out and not on the bus system or train system yet. So,
yeah. And I heard if you did have the voucher, is $800, and you found a place for $1,000, you can't pay the extra $200 because that's against the rules.
Exactly.
Yeah. It works against a lot of our clients.
I got sad face.
Unfortunately, we work with, again, this population. We track them. We have successes. We're fantastic. We celebrate those. We've had loss in our program, unfortunately. Homelessness is a serious issue. We've had individuals who have died of an overdose. We've had victims of assault and murder, and then die of medical illness because they don't have the insurance and to get the services they need. So our population, it really is life or death for a lot of them to get the housing they need and the services they need to be able to live in the community.
And one of the things we were talking about, the psychological assessments that we do, the testing for disability, we kind of spoke with Disability Determination Services. They usually order what's called a consultative exam in the community for people. So they would order one, 6 weeks from now at a certain time in a certain place with one of their evaluators that they would pay to do that. Unfortunately, our individuals are either in much more of a hurry to get that completed, or they don't have the means to remember that, or get to there. They don't have any income. Sometimes they were willing to actually take the testing that we can do while they're in custody because we know that they're sober and clean, and we're able to actually get a really good reading for them and write that up. So it kind of saves, the state money, the federal government money, because they don't have to pay an evaluator to do that particular evaluation when they probably aren't going to show up anyway. If they miss three, claim is just denied.
Okay.
So.
Well, you all seem like you're a bright light in a dark room.
Thank you. And I think there is hope in this process. We celebrate our individual successes, but systematically, I think we're coming together as a community. This idea of affordable housing as an issue has permeated all aspects of the community. And certainly the clients we work with are caught up in that as well. So as long as there's some movement towards that, I'm optimistic that we can find some solutions for our folks.
Well, I'm glad Mecklenburg County has the program.
Yeah, we have a lot of fun. I mean, fun in the sense of being with the clients and being able to help them and watch them grow and be successful. That's really what I enjoy. I've been in management. I've done lots of different things in my career, but to be honest, I really enjoy that. And I also enjoy watching some of the law enforcement. I think we worked on one case for 6 years and finally was able to get that person off the street. And for them to see that it was a process, when they're ready to want the help and need the help, it went very quickly. Like within 60 days, that person had benefits and an apartment and was doing really, really well and has continues to do well. So we never really close our cases. I mean, they do call periodically to say hello or, you know, something's wrong with my food stamps, you know, or something like that. And, you know, and we help them out because, you know, we're a support for them.
Humans helping humans.
Exactly.
How about that? Yeah, our humans today, our best friends. It's Dr. Stephen Strzelecki. He is our lead clinical psychologist, Forensic Evaluations Unit. Everybody's from the Forensic Evaluations Unit. Even Marcus Boyd. Even Melissa Ziss. And I thank you.
Thank you, Francine.
For doing what you do.
You're listening to the Francine Marie Show. We're popping out for a quick cup of tea, but we'll be right back.
This is my jam and jelly, y'all, on the Francine Marie Show. Spread that show out, girl. Spread it out.